Okay, so thanks for having me. I want to tell you about some deep brain physics, and this is work that I put out in December. Okay, so I think one of the most fascinating and mysterious properties of deep brains in string theory is that while a single D-brain behaves geometrically much like a classical p-dimensional surface, a collection of these D-brains have a configuration space that's actually much richer than the configuration space of a collection of these surfaces. So I'll just to take the example of zero brains, if I have a single zero brain, then the configurations of that zero brain are just described by a set of coordinates, just 9 positions for the zero brain in the transverse space, and that can depend on time. Now, if you go to n zero brains, you might have expected, at least for classical particles, that I would just take n times as many sets of coordinates, so n sets of 9 coordinates. But as Witten taught us, we know that, in fact, the configurations are described by 9 n by n Hermitian matrices. Okay, so for the case where these matrices all commute with each other, okay, then they can be simultaneously diagonalized by a symmetry transformation, and the diagonal elements can then be arranged into a set of n sets of 9 coordinates. Okay, so at least a subset of these configurations can be thought of as sort of classical positions for the zero brains, but there are a lot of other configurations since generically these matrices won't mutually commute. Okay, and in that case, there are no well-defined positions for the zero brains, and there's no way to assign well-defined positions for n particles. And in fact, we know that there are configurations where the interpretation as a set of particles is just completely misleading. And so a classic example is when we take the matrices X, there are the first 3 of them, for example, to be equal to the generators of the n-dimensionally reducible representation of SU2. And then the matrices don't commute, they satisfy the commutation relations of the SU2 algebra. And we know now that this configuration of matrices is best thought of as a rotationally invariant spherical configuration. And there's an alternate description where we think of it as a spherical D2 brain with a background magnetic field corresponding to the zero brain charge. Okay, another standard example is where we have an infinite number of zero brains, and then we can choose the matrices X to be a representation of the Heisenberg algebra. So the simplest case, we just take X comma Y is equal to I times some constant, and we know that that has an alternate description as an infinite flat D2 brain with a background B field. Okay, so that's in general, if we take a higher rank theta, then we get the non-commutative version of a D2P brain. Okay, so even though the zero brains don't have well-defined positions as particles, there's still clearly some kind of geometrical interpretation of these configurations. So I'm able to draw some pictures. And you can ask, well, how do I know that this is a sphere? How do I know what the shape of these general non-commutative configurations are? Okay, and the answer is that you can measure them in sort of the ordinary way. Okay, if I want to know where the zero brain charge is located in space-time, I can look at the operator that represents the zero brain charge. That's just the operator coupling to the zero component of the Ramon-Ramon one-form gauge field. Okay, so this is the gauge field that couples to zero brain charge. And if I look in the effective action, there's some operator built from these zero brain degrees of freedom that couples to this. Okay, so it's clear that we should identify this operator with the zero brain charge distribution. And similarly, there are other operators that correspond to energy density or membrane charge or forebrain charge, etc. Okay, and these operators were worked out, at least in the limit of alpha prime going to zero in weak string coupling. And so, for example, the zero brain charge operator, okay, in the momentum space is just simply given by this, where we take the matrix X, contract it with a spatial momentum, and then take an exponential and then trace it. Okay, so this is a map from the matrix configurations X to a classical function of momentum space, and if we Fourier transform that, then we get a regular position space distribution of zero brain charge. Okay, and similarly, the higher dimensional brain charges involve this exponential as well as commutators. Okay, so from this expression, it sort of manifests that when I have non-commuting configurations of matrices, I'm going to necessarily have some higher dimensional brain charge turned on, at least locally. Okay, so these couplings, this low energy effective action describing the couplings of the world volume degrees of freedom to the bulk supergravity fields is really useful for just understanding the geometrical picture of these brain configurations. It's also very useful for constructing interesting configurations. Okay, so Meyer showed that if I start with this action and then I turn on a field that is the field strength of this Ramon-Ramon three-form field, then a set of zero brains will polarize, they'll form a stable configuration, which is exactly this fuzzy sphere that I showed you in the previous transparency. Okay, so by turning on certain background fields and just finding the solutions, we can produce interesting configurations like that. Okay, and one final comment that I want to come back to is that one of the reasons that we sort of had to be able to construct higher dimensional brains out of zero brains is that the matrix theory conjecture of BFSS tells you that M theory in a certain background is supposed to be described just by the degrees of freedom of these zero brains. Okay, so we should be able to construct the basic objects of M theory, these membranes and five brains, just out of the zero brain degrees of freedom. And when you go to the 2A picture, these membrane configurations built out of the matrix theory degrees of freedom can be interpreted as D2 brains built out of zero brains. Okay, so far I've talked about zero brains or lower dimensional brains forming some sort of closed brain in the bulk, okay, in the sense that the fuzzy sphere or the plane has no boundary, and for a finite number of zero brains, all of the higher dimensional brain charges vanished. Okay, so the net charge of two brain was zero for the fuzzy sphere. Okay, but Strominger pointed out that often you can have D brains ending on other D brains, just like fundamental strings can end on D brains. So if you apply some S dualities and T dualities, you come up with the statement, for example, that a DP brain can end on a DP plus 2 brain. Okay, so for example, I can have an open D2 brain ending on a 4 brain. And so one question that you can ask is, well, can we build any of these open higher dimensional brains out of lower dimensional brain degrees of freedom? Okay, and there's a hint at least that the answer should be yes, and that is that there was a matrix model written down by Bercouz and Douglas that was supposed to describe M theory in a background where you have a certain number of M5 brains wrapped on a compact, on the light-like compact direction. Okay, and so this model was actually just the low energy degrees of freedom of a system of zero brains and four brains. And in this M theory background that we're supposed to be able to describe with the zero brains and the four brains, we have, in addition to the usual closed membranes, we can have open membranes ending on the five brain. Okay, so these degrees of freedom should be able to describe open membranes. So in principle, we know the answer is yes, we can describe higher dimensional open brains in terms of lower dimensional brains. So basically, I wanted to flesh out this picture and understand how that really works. And for example, how can you build an open DP plus 2 brain out of DP brains in the presence of DP plus 4 brains? Okay, so in order to sort of go about learning about these phenomena, just as in the previous case it was useful to have the effective action coupling bulk fields to the world volume fields of the D brains, we'd like to have the same thing in this case. Okay, so there's something that wasn't really previously known, and that is, given an arbitrary number of DP brains and in the presence of a DP plus 4 brain, or more than one DP plus 4 brain, how do the bulk fields couple to that those world volume degrees of freedom? And given that action, then we should be able to turn on various bulk fields and come up with some interesting configurations. And also, given that action, we should be able to learn things about the charge distributions and the geometrical picture of the configurations that we construct. Okay, so these are the goals. The first step is to derive the action, and then we want to use it to kind of come up with some interesting explicit examples of this. Okay, how do we derive these D-brain couplings? Okay, well, of course, we could just sit down and do string amplitudes. What we're really interested in is the coupling at linear order of some bulk field. So we take one closed string vertex operator and some number of open string vertex operators, and now we want to allow the points on the boundary either to end on a zero brain or to end on a four brain. And so we could just compute a whole bunch of these, and we'd end up with a complete effective action. But that would be a painful amount of work. Just to give you an idea, for the case where you just have a single type of brain, so for example, a collection of zero brains, the amplitudes have been computed with three open strings and one closed string, verifying some of the terms that I mentioned in the, so in this, for example, in this trace of x comma x e to the I kx, you can verify explicitly the x cubed type terms. But actually, I should say that more recently, some calculations have been done in the alpha prime going to zero limit, sort of explicitly computing higher order terms. Okay, but I want to work as little as possible if I can. So I'm going to prefer to use some indirect methods. Okay, so firstly, of course, you have all these symmetries. If you have DP brains and TP plus 4 brains, there are various rotational symmetries that are preserved and Lorentz symmetries. And of course, when you're writing down the action, you have to only include terms that are consistent with those symmetries. Something else that is actually extremely useful in coming up with these D brain actions is the fact that they should be transform simply under t-duality. So if I have, for example, the action for the 0-4 system, I just can simply write down the action for the d1-d5 system by t-duality, or the d5-d9 system. So all of these different d-brain actions are really simply related by t-duality. And that was very useful in the case of single brains, where a lot of the non-abelian structure of the dp brain actions could be determined just by knowledge of the abelian D9 brain Born-Enfeld action. Okay. Another thing that's useful, and that was useful in the construction of DP brain actions, is the connection to matrix theory that I've mentioned. Okay, so the point is that this matrix model of M theory is really just some particular limit of a system of zero brains in type 2A string theory. Okay, and using this relationship, what you learn is that the various operators in matrix theory that correspond to moments of conserved currents in M theory, okay, so for example, the membrane charge operator in M theory comes from leading terms in the zero brain currents. Okay, so if you know this D zero brain action coupling to the bulk fields, then you can just take leading terms in those currents and get these matrix theory operators. And similarly, if you know the matrix theory operators, you can at least get leading terms in the D0 brain currents. Okay, and this is one of the ways that some of these DP brain actions were derived originally. So that was for the basically for the BFSS case, and there these currents could be computed by sort of considering a process where you have two widely separated systems in M theory, and then within the matrix model context, you can integrate out the off diagonal elements and compute the one loop effective action, and that had exactly the structure that you'd expect from supergravity, which is current times propagator, and so you could then just calculate this matrix theory action and read off the currents, or at least leading expressions. So one could imagine doing a similar calculation in this Bercouz-Douglas model, but I'm actually going to do something even more indirect, which is to use supersymmetry and knowledge of these BFSS currents to derive these matrix theory operators for the Bercouz-Douglas model. Okay, so I'll use some symmetries, get these Bercouz-Douglas matrix model operators, use this relationship between M theory between matrix theory and type 2A to get operators in the 0-4 system, and then T-dualize to get the rest of the DP, DP plus 4 brain actions. Okay, so how does that work? Okay, so in general, we are interested in these brain bulk actions where we have some bulk fields at linear order, and then some currents, which are to be determined, which are built out of the world volume degrees of freedom of the brains. Okay, so there are going to be some number of supersymmetries in the theory, and we should demand that this action is invariant under those supersymmetries. Okay, so formally, if I just denote the bosonic fields by phi, and the fermionic fields by psi, and the bosonic currents here by J, and the fermionic currents by S, then I can just take a supersymmetry variation, and formally, this is what I get. But these variations of the bulk fields I know just from the, for example, 11-dimensional supergravity supersymmetry transformation laws. So this part and this part, I can just plug in from what I already know. And schematically, the supersymmetry variation of these bosonic bulk fields will be fermionic bulk fields.
They don't possibly get modified when a brain is present? I mean, since you're not just sort of doing well,
I mean, these are, let's see. These supersymmetry transformations are.
When supersymmetry is sort of an on shell supersymmetry, so if you put a brain there, you have sources and you change.
I mean, I'm working to linear order always in the bulk fields. So I think at least for what I'm doing, you don't have to worry about that. Yeah, you might worry it if you're sort of doing something at higher orders. Okay, so we can plug these in, and then essentially just collect the terms that depend on a given bulk field. Okay, so. For example, the ij component of the metric would couple to some expression, which would be the supersymmetry variation of this bosonic current minus some derivative of a fermionic current. And now we want to demand that this action is invariant. Okay, so naively you would just say that, well, each of the independent terms here would just have to be set to zero. But since you're typically working with an on-shell formulation of supergravity, you actually have to take into account the fact that I'm allowed to use the equations of motion. Okay, so this expression here is only required to be equal to something that, when I integrate by parts, can kill that. Okay. Okay, so what I get is a set of relations, for example, that says the supersymmetry variation of a given fermionic current will be equal to some bosonic current plus a particular differential operator times something which is arbitrary. However, we'll see that, in fact, this quantity here will often be fixed completely by demanding just that the symmetry, the structures appearing on each side of these equations are equal. Okay, so I'll show you in more detail what I mean by that later, but this is not as arbitrary as it seems to be. Okay, it turns out that this actually works very nicely in matrix theory. So what I just told you, I could have just done in the context of type 2A string theory with the system of brains, or type 2B or whatever systems of brains I wanted to start with, and whatever supergravity theory. But it turns out it's quite simple in the context of matrix theory. I mean, firstly, you just have fewer fields and fewer transformation laws. Okay, so the bulk fields now that I'm talking about are the metric, the three-form field, and this gravitino field, and the currents are the stress energy tensor that couples to the metric, the membrane current that couples to the three-form, a five-brain current that couples magnetically to the three-form, and then something that I'll ask, which is a supersymmetry current, a fermionic current. Okay, so we want to start with this and then find expressions in terms of the matrix theory variables for these currents. Okay, so the real reason why this is particularly convenient comes from remembering that, okay, so in matrix theory we're working with a DLCQ description, and so the symmetries that are manifest are sort of a subset of this SO10-1 that we expect for M theory. This gets broken to an SO9 cross the boosts in the light-like direction. And it turns out that the dimensions of these currents are determined by their charge under this SO11. Okay, so these indices I and j here run from, we can take running from 1 to 9 and then plus and then minus in the light cone formalism. And this SO11 charge, at least for the bosonic currents, is just the number of plus indices minus the number of minus indices. Okay, and so it turns out that there's just a simple linear relation between that charge and the dimension. And so in particular, there's sort of a unique lowest dimension current, which is T++, has the most number of pluses, and a unique highest dimension current, which is T-. And the supersymmetry generators, okay, we start out with some number of supersymmetries, they split in half, and half of them lower the dimension of a current when they act on the current, and half of them raise the dimension of a current. Okay, so this is the real reason why this becomes so simple in matrix theory, that these supersymmetry generators act like raising and lowering operators, and you start with some sort of unique lowest dimension current, which is really just the zero brain charge density. Okay, so it's going to be this operator trace of e to the ikx in the BFSS theory. Okay, so you get this nice picture. So in principle, you could just start with, okay, so apart from this issue of the auxiliary terms that I mentioned, you could then just start with T++, which was trace of e to the ikx, this sort of basic vertex operator, act with these sort of raising supersymmetries and generate everything else. Okay, so just to give you an example, I've written down the relation that corresponds to Q minus acting on this S++. Okay, so including all the indices, this is what it looks like. It says the supersymmetry variation of S++ is given by, so this is the one of the supersymmetry generators. This is the momentum density in one of the transverse directions. This is the membrane current, and this is this auxiliary term. Okay, so you'll notice that each of these terms here has some particular Lorentz structure. And what you'll find is that when I take the supersymmetry variation of this guy, I'll get these structures in addition to some other structures. And to cancel those other structures, I'll have to choose a particular term here for the auxiliary term.
I'm going to talk about the lack of an M plus on general theory.
I won't really talk about it, but
it's not a type.
It's I mean, it's the standard problem in matrix theory that basically the transverse five brain currents seem to vanish identically. Okay, and I don't have anything new to say about that. Okay, so far the discussion has been fairly general. We can check everything I said. starting with the BFSS matrix theory. I mean, we really want to do this for the Bruckhaus-Douglas model, but we can at least check it for this BFSS theory where most of the currents are already known and see if we can just rederive already known results. So of course there the Lagrangian is just this dimensional reduction of n equals 1 super Yang mills in 10 dimensions. So the raising supersymmetries are exactly the ones inherited from the super Yang mills theory in 10 dimensions. And the supersymmetries that lower dimension are just these very simple extra 16 supersymmetries that only act on the sort of the U1 part of this theta. Okay, so here we know what to start with. It's this T++ operator, which eventually gives you the zero brain charge distribution. And we act with Q minus on that. And then we use this relation here. So our supersymmetry relation that we've derived tells us that delta minus on this guy should be equal to this. So we apply this supersymmetry explicitly on this guy, and then we can just read off S++. Okay, so this gives us this current. Then we can do it again. So this is the relation I wrote down in the previous transparency. And just like I said, we find terms with these Lorentz structures in addition to other terms. And in order to cancel the other terms so that the two sides have the same form, we need to make a particular choice for this R. And that allows us to unambiguously determine this T plus I, which is the transverse momentum density, and this J plus IJ, which was the membrane current. Okay, so remember from the second transparency, this was just the guy that had x comma x and then the e to the ikx. We also see that there's some fermion terms as well. So this sort of very directly can give you all of the expressions for these currents in matrix theory. And at least as far as I've checked, this possibly ambiguous term here doesn't mess things up. Okay, so now we want to get to the real deal here, which is deriving something we didn't know before. And so now we have to start with this Bruckhaus-Douglas matrix model. So let me just remind you a little bit about what that is. Okay, so they claim that the matrix model for M3 with k longitudinal M5 brains and n units of momentum is given by this limit of n zero brains in the presence of k D4 brains in type 2A string theory. Okay, so what is that action? Well, to describe this 0-4 action in flat space, it's simplest to work in the T-dual framework where I have 5 brains and 9 brains. And there you can express everything in the language of n equals 1 supersymmetry in 6 dimensions. So in that language, the 5-5 strings give you just the gauge multiplet, so you have this UN gauge theory on the 5 brain, and one adjoint hypermultiplet. Okay, so of course, this part is just coming from the dimensional reduction of the d equals 10, n equals 1 super Yang mills theory with 16 supercharges. In addition, you have these 5-9 strings, and those form k fundamental hypermultiplets. Okay, so you get this extra matter. And then finally, you have some 9-9 strings, and actually the only degrees of freedom that remain when you take this limit to define the matrix model are going to be certain zero modes which describe the positions of the 4 brains. Okay, so in what I'll talk about, the formulas I write down, I'll just set these position moduli to 0. So I'm thinking about some stack of 4 brains sitting at the origin and a set of 0 brains. Okay, so what does it look like when we dimensionally reduce to get the matrix theory action? Okay, so these are the bosonic terms in black. There's kinetic terms for all of these degrees of freedom. This term, and this term are really just what you had before in the BFSS theory. Okay, so this is just xi comma xj squared, but now I've written out, now we have the SO9 sort of broken down to smaller symmetry groups. So these XAs are X's in the directions transverse to the four brains, and these X, these are really XI in the directions of the forebrain, but I'm using a notation where SO4 is thought of as SU2 cross SU2, okay, where these rows are SU2 right and row dots are SU2 left indices. Okay, so you don't really have to worry about the index structure too much if you don't want to. Okay, so we have these terms we started with, and then there are some extra terms involving the fundamental field. Okay, so this term tells me that if I take a zero brain and if I move it away from the four brains, then these fundamental fields are going to get a mass, okay? And which makes sense because you just have a string that's now being stretched from the zero brains to the four brains. And then you get one other term here, okay? And so this term where these X's are in the four brain directions combines with another term, and so this is the part of the action that's relevant to finding the vacua, the Higgs vacua. So if I just set these XAs to zero, so all of the zero brains are living in the forebrain, then this is the part of the action that remains, and the supersymmetric vacua are then described by setting this to zero, and that is exactly the ADHM equations. Okay, so those equations describe instantons in the forebrain, which are just these dissolved zero brains. Okay, and when you're deriving things with supersymmetry, it helps to know about fermions as well. So those are the fermion terms. Okay, so now I want to derive the currents, but we sort of immediately run into an obstacle, which is that we don't really know what our starting point is. Okay, so in this BFSS story that I told you about, I knew that I should start with, well, I'd already derived this operator, so I kind of knew that that's what I should start with. Here, I don't really know what T++ should be for the Berkus-Douglas model. So one thing I do know is that if I set all of the fundamental fields to zero, I set all the new matter to zero, that it should just reduce to what I had for the BFSS theory. So what I can do is just think about this as the term that I know, and then make some expansion in sort of unknown terms. Yeah.
And I think just sort of a general question, which has been in the back of my mind for a while.
Okay.
So are you using just the unbroken supersymmetry?
I should have said that. Yeah. In the Berkus-Douglas model, I'm just going to be using the 16 unbroken supersymmetries. In principle, I think one might be able to use broken. I mean, I think the full action in string theory should still know about the unbroken supersymmetries as well. So I think you could actually the broken supersymmetries as well. So I think you could actually, if you needed to, get further constraints using broken supersymmetries.
Okay. I guess I was worried. I mean, when you have fewer unbroken supersymmetries, I thought it might be a weaker. Construction is very powerful.
It turns out to be powerful enough even with the 16.
Just
yeah.
Using the ones
you're having. Yeah. Right. But it'd be an interesting question. I mean, I think you might be able to use those other ones as well. The D0 brain action should still be invariant under translations, even though the zero brains themselves kind of break translation invariance in a similar way. The whole thing should know about these extra broken supersymmetries. Okay, but I'm just going to use the 16, and that'll turn out to be enough for what I need. Okay. So what I'm going to do is think about this unknown expression as an expansion in powers of the transverse momentum. Okay. So essentially what that's equivalent to saying is that instead of thinking about this whole current as a function of spatial momenta, I'm going to at least start by working with moments of that current distribution. Okay, so this expansion that I've written down is the multipole expansion, where the first term would be the charge, and the second term would be the dipole moment, etc. So what you can do is just write down all of the possible terms, for example, at the next order in K that are consistent with the symmetries, and then just try and apply the supersymmetry relations with these undetermined coefficients. And it turns out that the supersymmetry is strong enough to constrain and, in fact, determine exactly the next term in the series. Okay, so this T++ for the Bercouz-Douglas model at the next order has some unique term that one finds by consistency. To give you an idea of what breaks down if you try something more general, for example, you find that you apply these supersymmetry relations and you find a stress energy tensor that's not symmetric. And so in order, for example, to make that symmetric, you need to choose a particular term here. Okay, so in fact, it seems that the supersymmetry is powerful enough to tell you about the Bercouz-Douglas currents just knowing the BFSS currents. Okay. And actually, just from this term here, you can get a lot of new information. Okay, so I start with this. I can use the supersymmetry relations, and I get a lot of monopole-dipole moments of higher dimension operators, all these other currents. And what that corresponds to when I eventually write down the effective action are terms in the effective action coupling to constant potentials and constant field strengths, which is sort of a lot of what you want to know in order to play around with these systems. Okay, so even using this multipole expansion and just keeping sort of the first non-trivial term, you learn a lot. And so you go through this series, and then you can, for example, get the D0, D4 action in terms of these matrix theory currents. And these matrix theory currents you get from T++ and the supersymmetry relations. Okay. So don't stare at this too much. Just an example of the amount of information that you get. You get basically all of these currents at order k to the 0 and a bunch of other currents that order k, and then T++ we knew at order k squared. And to show you an example of what these look like, so the BFSS currents involve some symmetrized trace of these exponentials with extra operators here. Now we have these fundamental fields, and typically the structure of the terms that you get are you form some adjoint out of the fundamental and anti-fundamentals and just insert these into the trace. Okay, so we've derived a lot of terms in these actions, and now we want to get to sort of some physics. How do we actually use these actions to derive some interesting configurations? Okay, so let's start with a bunch of zero brains and a single four brain. And what I'd like to do is turn on some kind of background field so that the zero brains will expand into an open D2 brain. Now, in the Myers case, to get that fuzzy sphere, what you did is you turned on a term that made it energetically favorable for that sphere to exist. So you turn on a term which associated a negative energy to a dipole moment of membrane charge. Okay, so essentially what we want to do is turn on an operator that associates a negative energy to having some sort of membrane area. Okay, so in the BFSS model, remember this xi comma xj term was membrane area. It turns out that gets modified to include a term involving these fundamental fields. Okay, and now this trace can be non-zero clearly for finite n. So before, if I just had a finite number of zero brains, this trace was always zero, but now I can have that equal to something non-zero, and I'll just call this operator D.
Is that n equals to D term?
Yes, yeah. I'll say something more about that in a sec. So when I go into this 2A picture, what I want to do is sort of turn on this operator, this area operator, and it turns out that couples in the 2A theory either to Bij or this Ramon-Ramon field. Okay, so I'm going to focus on this B and just turn on a constant B field. So to turn on this operator, turn on a constant B field, and well, that's exactly turning on an FI term in this field theory, and it's something that's been studied a lot recently. Setting this potential to zero just gives you the non-commutative versions of the ADHM equations. Okay, so this is a little bit mysterious. We've sort of tried to come up with some open membrane configurations, and what we're seeing is that the configurations are non-commutative instantons. Okay, so how are non-commutative instantons open membranes? Well, actually, this has been suggested before in the context of a non-commutative version of the 0-2 theory. Bercuse mentioned that that certain non-commutative instanton configurations could be associated with open membranes, but we'll see this a lot more explicitly. Okay, so the simplest case is just to consider planar configurations where we set x3 equals x4 equals 0. So we just have an x1 and x2. All the action is going on in the 1-2 plane. And also, this requires us to set one of these phi fields to 0. And then the equation that you get is this non-commutative ADHM equation becomes exactly this. Okay, so this is sort of an equation that tells you about configurations of instantons where all of the instantons lie in a plane. And this equation was actually studied last year in a very different context by Polychronakos and other people after that. And it turns out that equation is exactly the constrained equation that comes from a matrix formulation of non-commutative Chern-Simons theory. Okay, so there's a matrix description of non-commutative Chern-Simons theory, and there's some regulated version of that where you introduce some fundamental fields. And this model was studied actually in the context of the quantum Hall system, and it was shown that, in fact, configurations described by this constraint equation provide a very good description of a set of n electrons in the lowest Landau level. Okay, so we have n electrons in a plane and a strong magnetic field. And what do those configurations look like? Well, there are, I guess the important thing is that in the lowest Landau level, the phase space becomes identified with the coordinate space. Okay, so if you think about starting with electrons in a magnetic field and turning on a very large B field, then that B field term, which is Bij, Xi, Xj dot, dominates the kinetic field terms. And so the quantum commutation relations are just between X and Y. Okay, so Xy equals B. Okay, so there's sort of a finite area associated with each electron. And so we can have widely separated electrons. And this sort of corresponds to our picture of instantons. But if you try and bring those electrons together in that plane, then you know that you can't bring them together on top of each other. Okay, so there's this uncertainty that requires you to have some droplet as the minimum area configuration. Okay, so this is what people call a quantum Hall droplet or puddle, and there are various configurations that you can write down explicitly, sort of solutions to this equation that correspond to this round droplet, or the round droplet with some excitations, or an annular droplet. This is called a quasi-particle in the quantum Hall language. So now we see that, well, okay, yes, there are configurations that look a lot like what we would have expected instantons to look like, but if you try and bring all those instantons together, they're going to form something that looks a lot like a membrane. Okay, so now I want to show you explicitly using some calculations that these configurations, which we just borrow from Polychronakos, really, really look like membranes in string theory. Okay, so the simplest one is just to take the disk. And the solution to that constraint equation was written down in several different contexts, actually originally by Braden and Nekrasov as a configuration of non-commutative instantons. What you do is you take this A matrix, okay, X1 plus I, X2, to be basically a truncation of the matrix representation of a creation operator. And then this this phi is just, I mean, in some particular gauge, this phi is given by this. Okay, so we could just borrow this solution. Polykronakos wrote this down also as the round quantum Hall droplet. Okay, so how do we see that this is really a two-brain? Well, first we can just see what happens in the large n limit. Okay, if we take large n, then well, we could sort of ignore this phi. It has to do with the boundary, and this A becomes exactly the harmonic oscillator creation operator matrix. And I told you in the very first transparency of my talk that matrix corresponds to an infinite D2 brain. Okay, so we see that in the large n limit, this thing expands into an infinite D2 brain. So it must be some sort of finite D2 brain in the in general. Okay. So, well, we can do even better. We can ask about the charge distribution using the operators we've derived. Okay, so for example, we can look at of course, the zero brain charge is just given by n, but we can look at the dipole moment and the quadrupole moment of that to see how the charge is distributed for this configuration. And so you can calculate these moments using our T++ operator, and it turns out they match exactly with the moments of a uniform disk of charge. Okay, you can write down all kinds of other solutions. Turns out, given any solution and an area-preserving diffeomorphism of the plane, you can write down a transformation on the solution that generates a new solution. Okay, so you can explicitly write down things with wavy boundaries. An interesting thing about this sort of not matrix geometry is that if you try and write down the transformation corresponding to a boundary that's too wavy, okay, so the explicit form is that A goes to A plus some epsilon times A dagger to the power n. Okay, so if n is small, this creates some ripple with frequency n on the boundary. If you try and take n of the same order as the size of the matrix, then instead of getting very fine ripples, what happens is you get a hole in the middle. Okay, so using an area-preserving diffeomorphism, we can generate an annular membrane, and this is the explicit solution. And you can go through the quadrupole moment calculation, and again, it corresponds to a uniform annulus of charge. Okay, so just to show you So this is the moment of inertia would be the case derivative with respect to k squared of t++, sorry, two derivatives with respect to k. And that gives me this operator. And if I evaluate this operator for this configuration, I actually get a diagonal matrix. And the entries go from 1 plus q to 2n minus 1 plus q. So this tells me that the area is sort of uniformly distributed with respect to R squared, okay, which is the property of a uniform annulus between these two radii. Okay, so they look a lot like membranes. One thing that you might complain about right now is that, maybe these are just zero brains that happen to be pushed together in something that looks like a membrane shape. How do we know it's really behaving anything like a membrane? So to really see that it's sort of a membrane, I want to try and sort of excite a collective mode of the membrane to see if it does something membrane-like. So what I want to do is try and pull this disk off of the forebrain. So I can either do that by turning on a gradient of the one-form field to pull it off by its zero-brain charge, or turn on a gradient of this three-form field to pull it off by the two-brain charge. Either way, it gives you basically the same result. So if I include a field like this, okay, so just a potential that's linearly dependent on a transverse coordinate, then the action becomes this. So now I include this X9 matrix explicitly. So there's a term that I mentioned that tries to pull the D2 brain off the forebrain. There's another term which just tends to suppress bending in the membrane. And finally, there's this term that gives a mass to the 0-4 strings, and that's going to serve to keep the boundary attached. Okay, so we can solve this perturbatively for small values of alpha, the small values of this field, and you find a solution. And the solution is one where this X9 matrix is diagonal. Okay, so we have a diagonal X9, and remember our moment of inertia matrix was also diagonal, so this R squared matrix was diagonal. And so you get an exact relation between the X9 matrix and the X squared matrix. And so you can conclude that there is a sort of a well-defined profile of this solution in X9 versus R squared, and that's exactly some parabolic bulging brain solution. Okay. What's the time? Sorry.
There's technically 5 minutes left. We started late anyway.
Okay. Well, no, I just have about 5 minutes. Okay. So we've seen some interesting open brain configurations and sort of shown explicitly that some of these non-commutative instanton configurations really do look like membranes. What I want to do now is just mention a possible way of getting a more complete expression for this T++. Okay, so I kind of worked in the multipole expansion just keeping some leading terms. But there's actually a way that might give you a full expression. Okay, and that is to sort of exploit this these sort of dual pictures of zero brains and a four brain. Okay, so you have one picture where you describe the zero brains explicitly using the matrix X and the fundamental fields phi. But on the Higgs branch, there's supposed to be another picture where I can just describe everything in terms of the four brain gauge field. Okay, so a set of zero brains dissolved in the four brain can also be understood, if the zero brains are large enough, as just some classical configuration of the four-brain gauge field, which has n instantons. Okay, and in fact, there's sort of a map between these zero-brain configurations described by X and phi and the description in terms of the four-brain gauge field. And that's given by the ADHM construction. Okay, so given a matrix X and a field phi, there's some gauge field that you can construct explicitly by the ADHM construction. And if I were able to construct that explicitly as a general formula, then I have a way of coming up with an operator for the zero brain charge density, because I know what that is in terms of the four brain gauge field. Okay, it's just F wedge F. So here's a prescription in principle for coming up with this operator. I should say that this isn't quite right, because the ADHM construction assumes that X and phi satisfy the equations of motion. Okay, so this, what we really want is some sort of an off-shell operator in terms of X and phi, and this is really giving us the answer for the charge distribution for something that satisfies the equations of motion. Okay, so the off-shell operator could be this up to terms that vanish when the ADHM equations are satisfied. Okay, but we can go ahead and see what you get. So, well, it turns out you can do this. You get a rather messy expression. So rho of X is given by something in terms of this A, which I define in terms of a Z and an F, which I define here. And you don't learn a lot by looking at that. We'd like to sort of compare this to the answer that we got before. One problem is that this answer sort of is naturally in position space, and what we had before was in momentum space. So we really want to take the Fourier transform of this and compare it to what we had before. So I want to simplify things a little bit by just focusing on a single zero brain, just to see whether this formula actually makes any sense. And then you can actually write this down explicitly, do the Fourier transform, and you get this. Okay, so it's an expression, this alpha is just some integration variable. But if we expand just to the leading term involving the fundamental fields, we get exactly what we had before. Okay, so this suggests that this sort of expression and this one is actually right, or at least on the right track. But it has a very puzzling feature, and that is that if I try to expand beyond this term that we already know, this the integral will diverge. Okay, so I should say this integral is always well defined, but it's not analytic at k equals zero. Okay, it has something like a k to the fourth log of k singularity at k equals zero. Well, this is actually corresponds to something physically reasonable, something we should have expected, and that is that we can't actually define all of the multipole moments of the charge distribution for one of these instantons because it doesn't fall off fast enough. It falls off like 1 over x to the 8th. And so if I insert too many powers of x on top to define higher and higher multipole moments, eventually you're going to get a divergence. Okay, so actually everything seems consistent, the terms we've derived were consistent with this answer, and this is consistent with the expectation that we shouldn't be able to define all of the multipole moments. So at least in principle, we have a more complete expression for T++. Now there's one confusing aspect about this, and that is that going back to what I said early on in the talk, I might have expected that I should be able to derive this action by doing string amplitudes. So I would have expected that if I wanted the next term in this series, that I could do this amplitude. I could take one closed string and four of these 0-4 string vertex operators, and this would give me the term of order. So this would be, for example, the bulk field and then the phi to the fourth term. But if this expression is right, then there is no such well-defined phi to the fourth term. Okay, so this sort of predicts that this tree-level string amplitude should diverge. Yeah, that's right. So I mean, if I sum up all of the diagrams, then I would be able to get a finite answer. So exactly, it's an infrared singularity. So we don't want to throw string theory out the window, but it's maybe surprising to me, at least, that you would get such a divergence in just this 5-point tree-level amplitude. Although that would be, I don't see any obvious way around that. So that's maybe a prediction that if you were actually to do this 5-point function, you'd find some sort of a divergence. But we already know that we can interpret it as an infrared divergence and sum up a lot of diagrams to get a well-defined answer. Although it'd certainly be interesting to see whether that's true. And if this is finite, then there must be some way around what I've told you already. Okay, so just a few concluding remarks. I've just sort of touched the surface on some configurations that you can construct using zero brains and four brains. There's probably a lot more interesting configurations to be discovered if you work at it. These effective actions that I've worked out should also be useful, for example, for studying, you know, scattering or absorption from D brains. That's exactly what you need, the action that's sort of linear in a bulk field and coupling to these world volume degrees of freedom. It might also be useful, for example, in the context of D3 brains in the presence of D7 brains, which could have some phenomenological interest. This gives you essentially all of the marginal and relevant operators that you can get by turning on some background fields in that system. Okay, so. So you get all of these operators and sort of a way to turn them on using string theory. And another thing is that these open D2 brains inside the forebrain are sort of finite non-commutative geometries. So it might be a useful way to regulate non-commutative field theories. You're able to have explicitly a boundary by introducing these fundamental fields and so you explicitly have a very well-defined model that, in the large n limit, should give you non-commutative field theory. Okay, and finally, you've learned some new things about this Bricusse-Douglas model, something about the operators in that theory corresponding to various moments of various conserved currents. And so, I mean, of course, it would be nice to use that model to learn something more about M5 brains. Okay, so I'll finish there.